Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Today we're going to continue my conversation with Dr. Barbara Minton, clinical psychologist, musician, and neuroscientist. We talk today about how Dr. Minton uses music in her clinical work, as well as the performances she's been planning and doing recently with her new work, Calm the Storm. Well, as you sort of take a look at this from music, the direction of music and performance and composing and the side of science and intervention and clinical work, how do those different perspectives inform what you think of as creative or creativity?
Boy, you really know how to ask the good questions here. I'm impressed. Wow. So there's a really interesting book. It's called The Creative Act, A Way of Being. If people want to just delve into this a little bit. And I think, there's something that happens. I wish I understood creativity better, but there's something that happens when these different aspects of something come together in an intuitive way. Like, why did this idea pop into my head? Like, I should find somebody and compose this music and try this out, like, and interweave all these different parts of my expertise together. We can ask that question about, like, how does that, the creative act, happen in this way? And there is that, I think there's sort of levels of answers to this, right? There's that level. And then there's also the creative act as a more intuitive expression of who you are in the world. And when you can somehow link the different threads of your life together, it becomes sort of a more coherent emanation of your own being in the world. So there's that part of it too. And of course, some of the most beautiful creative acts are probably creative acts that are not even made for an audience. They're made privately or in that moment, and they may or may not even be shared later, because that creative act is a way of becoming who you really are in this world. It's not always meant to be shared. Now, I had an agenda with this because of the science part of it. But I compose other pieces that are just mine, and I may choose to share them or not to share them. And they're more, that's probably a more, I don't know if I'd say that's a more pure creative act or not. It's certainly more me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was talking with a neuropsychologist, Rex Jung, who has done MRI studies and other studies of the creative process. And he and other research has shown this as well, that the default mode network is involved. So that's the being personal, the personal. It's about you, and it's about floating, I guess, sort of ideas floating around. But then the salience network kicks in as well.
Makes perfect sense, right?
Right, yeah. Right. And he talks about creativity as, there's a unique aspect to it. There's a sort of a utility aspect to it. Although that's, I think, an interesting question to go into, but you can kind of see, like you're saying, it's makes sense that these brain networks would be involved in that process.
Yeah. I think what's a little bit hard, like for some of us that have been so trained to be analytical and scientific, is there's this, and this is where the default mode and switching and executive control networks come into play, right? Is you have to let go of a lot of this, and then you have to bring it back in. So you have to let go, let the default network do its thing, and then you have to rein back in and think about what you're doing. And if you talk to some of these virtuosic musicians, they they do this all, they think about it this way. They're like, you know, there's the technical aspect, and you're very analytical about the technical aspect of music. And then once that's mastered, it's true in sports too, right? Like, once that's mastered, you let go and you let the music play through you. And then that's when, oh, it gives me chills thinking about it. That's when the magic happens, right? When the music is playing through you and you're no longer playing it. And that's, what is that? I mean, did he study that?
Well, he was studying creative thinking, not wasn't music.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see in those moments when you feel that. If the default mode network is just activating because everything, you know, you have such automaticity on all the other stuff, the complex stuff.
So there's your $500,000.
I know, right? You're volunteering to write, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because you don't have enough to do.
I don't. I want to make a sort of a shift to your clinical work and how you use creativity with your clients. So you use, you do neurofeedback, you do entrainment. What are you finding in terms of bringing music into some of this work, whether it's sort of straightforward in big quotes, psychotherapy or the neurofeedback work?
Well, let me talk about the talk therapy part of it first, and then talk about the neurofeedback part of it. And I'm going to criticize myself a little bit, because years ago I had a teenage client and they were very suicidal. And you know how that is when you have a client that has suicidal ideation. And I was doing everything I could possibly, everything in the books that I could think about, you know, all this stuff. And one day this teenager came in and said, you know, I found this song, and it's what I call an anthem song. You know, these sort of songs like, life is terrible, but, you know, we'll all persist and survive. And
right.
And I said, oh, that's pretty cool. And this was back in the day of iPods. And they listened to that song, you know, obsessively. Every time they had suicidal ideation, they would click that song. And I remember seeing them like walking down the street in front of my office with their little earbuds in playing this song. I thought, oh, that's really cool. I actually think this song is keeping this person alive, not me. Mm-hmm. And then I forgot about it, which was so dumb. It was like, I was so in my little slot of what I was trained to do as a clinician, that could have been a pivotal moment for me of sort of opening up in a creative way to saying, you know, this is so powerful. This person had access to this 24/7. Like, it meant something to them. It was so deep, and it kept them alive. And so I think when I came back around to this, basically through the help of Jim Evans, who I'm sure that wasn't his intent necessarily in asking me to write that chapter, I just started to realize how we all get stuck in our own lanes, you know, and if we can start to open ourselves up to what's in front of our eyes. And I think many people in the neurofeedback field have been very good at this, right? You start to learn about nutrition, you start to learn about sleep, you start to learn about things. If you're trained as a psychologist, I never learned about that nutrition is important. Right. And it's like a no-brainer, right? We have to push ourselves out a little bit into these other domains. And I think music is one of them, partly because it's so cheap and it's so accessible. I think also, you know, as you get more experienced as a clinician, you start to think more, hopefully, about what your client needs, not so much about what it is you can do to your client.
Right.
And that's, I think, where creative thinking really comes in. And you can start to move outside these restricted domains. And so for me, I always felt a little awkward when I first started using this music, because, you know, there's kind of a weird power differential that you can get in with this, because this is a product I made. There's kind of pressure on them to like it because of the power differential and right. all this stuff. Right. And so I tried to mitigate that as best I could. But when I started, you know, people start texting me. I just got a text the other day of someone with their sleeping baby, and they're like, I played Calm the Storm. my baby went to sleep. And then I'm kind of like, wow, okay, well, like, I can't, why should I be withholding this? That's the right. side of it, right? Like, right. because I'm kind of feel weird. So I said, you know, listen to this. And this woman who has complex PTSD and she hasn't slept in years and she started sleeping. I mentioned that earlier. So I think allowing these kinds of interventions in, and I think people in the neurotherapy world are more open to this than in other domains.
Yeah.
So I think so. Creatively, that's with the music part, at least, I think just opening myself up to that. And if they don't happen to like this particular album, I now know the parameters to choose other types of music that have different styles that meet those parameters. Or I think I know some of the parameters. In the neurofeedback thing, I think this is just a great ancillary. I mean, we play the music to people if we're doing just feedback through music. And if they like it, if they don't like it, it's fine. We don't force it on them. But if they if we like it, it's like adding power to the neurofeedback. And so why wouldn't we do this? Why would we play some random piece of music when we can give extra power to the neurofeedback? So I don't know if that's particularly creative, but it's kind of neat to have that as an alternative. If someone's sitting there training HRV and the background music that they have on the HRV isn't that great, you just turn that off and put this on. And,
right. Yeah. Well, and I guess, again, the next step would be to look at why does certain types of sounds, music, work with changing brainwave activity in some people and not in others.
Yeah, and I think there's probably, you know, 60 years of research that could be done in this domain that would be so fascinating. And it's really too bad that we all got trained so narrowly. And this is true in all the health professions, right?
Yeah.
And so we don't, some of these things that are sitting out there right on our front steps, we haven't studied. And there is a great study though that I love where they did fMRI with people listening to different genres of music and then listening to people give a talk, and they actually did all the coherences, and you can see all the different Brodmann areas, and it's amazing to see how the different types of music affect different Brodmann areas. There's high differential effects. And then the spoken word, what they played was that Hitler, that talk. Who was the comedian? Charlie Chaplin doing this, that Hitler.
The dictator?
The dictator, the great dictator. Right. And it was interesting, like that was the least activated. That activated everybody's brain the least. The one that activated the most areas of the brain was Bach, when you were both listening to Bach and watching the music go by on the screen.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that to me brings up a point you'd made before, which is, actually you've made this point in a couple of different ways. There's something that we can't yet explain about this process and about music and how it may impact us in lots of different ways, whether it's in health or in our own creative, you know, pathways. Can you think of a story or a client or some situation where the music that you used really seemed to help in an inexplicable or unexpected way?
Well, I'll tell you just a story, and I don't know if it's inexplicable, but it's at least was interesting to me, so you're stuck with it. Sorry.
Okay. No apologies necessary.
So I have this workshop that I do. It's called Music, the Brain, and Healing, And it goes through all the research on music. And then Peppino actually plays different elements of music on the guitar. So it's this combination of actual experiencing the music and then actually learning the research behind it, learning how to make a playlist, you know, all this stuff. And so one of the things we do is give people out those little thermometers, you know, so you can hold those little thermometers and see your hand temperature, with your hand temperature going up and down. And it's turned out to be surprisingly effective with people. And then, you know, in the group, we had a big discussion about some people's, you know, little thermometer went up, some people's went down. And then the next week, one of the people from the workshop came up to me and said, I've been going around with my little thermometer and I went to church and I held the thermometer and they made all these observations about themselves, about mm-hmm. how they were reacting to the music and how they were reacting to the sermon and how they were reacting to the other thing. And I just thought that was so fascinating that this person was actually found a way of utilizing this little thermometer and how it gave them so much insight into their own reactions in the world. And I was quite kind of taken aback and thrilled because most mm-hmm. people wouldn't do that. And they were just so excited about being able to see what was actually going on with them. And I think that kind of access, that true true real life biofeedback, yeah. right? It wasn't something we were doing in the office. It wasn't something we were trying to teach people. It was someone learning about themselves in the real world. And I thought that was just so really cool and beautiful. And the music, the reaction to the music is what got them interested in the idea, because they all of a sudden realized, oh my gosh, things are going on with me that I wasn't aware of. I thought that was really, really cool.
So the insight we can gain from these experiences.
It was almost like the music was a vehicle with mm-hmm. for them to learn to access something about themselves that wasn't easily, that they wouldn't have necessarily easily accessed previously. So that was really interesting. And then, you know, the other things with the music is just like, I mean, some of these things people say, wow, Peppino played the album for a colleague of his, and the guy actually recorded us a response, and he said, you should rename this album, All Is Forgiven. And he said, I had such a profound reaction to this. He said, I feel like I can start my life anew. Everything is gone. And he started crying. He audioed this mm-hmm. and he went through what he thought the characteristics of the music were. And he said, this listening to this changed my life. Wow. I mean, wow. And then I got a text from another person up in Alaska, someone I knew years ago up there. And she was like, I played this to my dogs and my dogs calmed down. And then about 2 weeks later, she sent me another text and she said, my husband said, can we stop playing this Calm the Storm album over and over? And she said, I told him, no. It's calming the dogs down. We're playing it over and over. I mean, these are all pretty unexpected things. Yeah, that wasn't my plan. But, you know, I think it's great if we'll calm their dogs down. It's incredible.
Well, I think that music has been used, you know, forever as a way to help us to improve our health. And you bring a certain systematic approach to it and sort of a more, you know, scientific approach to it. But lots of people don't, you know, lots of people sort of use music in various ways, whether that's useful or not. What are some of the misconceptions that are out there that you've come across around music and creativity and the impact on our health?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest ones is that people think that music that they like is good for them. Mm-hmm. Music that you like is not necessarily good for you. And I can give you an example of that. And this is, again, this is something that I did years ago. You would think I would have learned from it, but sometimes I'm a slow learner. I had a 20-something person come in who was very anxious. And I said, well, what kind of music do you like to listen to? And they said, rap music. And I said, oh, well, that's interesting. Well, let's play this. Let's map you play rap music and then map you. And of course, he had excess beta and high beta, played rap music. It got worse. Well, why did he like rap music? If you're anxious and you can't sleep at night, you're really tired, right? So what do? You drink caffeine and you listen to high intensity music because that gets you going. And then night comes, you can't sleep again. And so you get into this vicious cycle. And we talked about, well, maybe, you know, rap music is cool, you like it, but maybe you want to make a different choice. And I also had another really interesting case of someone who worked in the health industry, and you know how people get on these terrible shifts at night. And so they were saying, well, what I do is I take music, I can't fall asleep. You know, I'm not allowed to fall asleep. So I put this music, I lie down on the cot and I put this music underneath and I play it loud enough to keep me from falling asleep. Well, this is an exhausted person, like, you know. Yeah. So these are bad uses of music. And they're creative.
Right. But they're not.
Right. And we also have what I would consider to be unethical uses of music. So you have, you know, like when Hitler, you have all these uses of music and war and to brainwash people and for propaganda purposes and all this kind of stuff. And there, a lot of this stuff is pretty brilliant, but it's, it's the use of it's, I think, ethically, you know, pretty bad.
Well, the ability to change the brain, I guess, does not have to be in any one particular direction.
Exactly. And so I think this is one of the big misconceptions that we have, is that if you like it, it's cool and you should you should listen to more of it. That's not necessarily true. And one brave person actually did a study on having people listen to music they didn't like and seeing what the effect of it was. And it actually still changed their brain in the whatever the appropriate direction was. But of course, you're not going to get compliance. You're not going to get the person who's like listening to that album three times a day if they don't like the music. So yeah.
Well, if we're thinking about changing the brain for good rather than evil, what are some of the ways that people out there who are either listening or maybe eventually get this information, where should they start? I mean, it's Calm the Storm, of course. Should all go out, get that, and we'll put links
to it. Yeah, so music.
What are other ways?
Musicandhealing.net is the website, and I've got some of the brain imaging on there and some of the story behind the album. There's certainly in that book, that Elsevier book, I think it's called Biofeedback, and no, it's called Quantitative Electroencephalogram and Biofeedback. That's the one where I wrote the chapter in it that has a review of the literature. But now that we have AI, you can just type in blah, 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 whatever it is you're interested in, complex PTSD and music, and or go to PubMed and look that up. And I'm always happy if people want to write to me. We're very interested in continuing to do workshops and other events for people. And I'll tell you what's really cool about that is you can read about this stuff, but experiencing it, totally different. I mean, your understanding of it, both for yourself personally and for your clients, will change when you sit in a room. And even the recording, like yesterday we were rehearsing for this conference or this concert on Sunday, and someone came in the room and asked if they could listen, and they laid down. And so, you know, the pipe organ, it's everything in the room is vibrating because of the resonance of the pipe organ. And just tears started to come out of their eyes because they were so moved by the experience of the music. And so I think, and there is data showing that live music registers more profoundly in the brain than recorded music. So I think these are all ways of learning more. So there's learning more by looking at the literature, and there's learning more by having that experience yourself and thinking about it yourself. Like, is this music activating my sympathetic nervous system? And that feels good in the moment, but maybe it's not what I need. Like, that's another way of learning. I was practicing the organ the other day, and I was playing something really exciting and intense. It was actually out of a movie soundtrack, and I could feel my heart rate coming up in my, and after a while I was like, I gotta quit practicing this. I gotta play something more mellow because I'm getting like so amped up. And that's just another way of learning. So I think all those places are interesting places to start. I think that book is by Rubin. Have you read that, The Creative Act, A Way of Being?
I haven't, but I'll link to it in the show notes. I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, that's such a great book. And it's almost like a meditative approach to creativity and thinking about creativity and music and other and life in general, right? I mean, finding a new, he makes this point, right? Like finding a new way to get to the grocery store is the creative act. It doesn't always have to be some big, you know, inventing a new theory about the world.
Well, Barb, thank you so much for joining us on Healthy Brain, Happy Body and talking about your project and how music can really, it impacts the brain, changes the brain. So that link between creativity and physiology and health.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I obviously love to talk about this stuff. So you gave me the forum. I'm very grateful.
Happy to do it.
This is Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Dr. Barbara Minton, psychologist, musician, and neuroscientist. Find out more about her and her album, Calm the Storm, in the show notes or at musicandhealing.net. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcast or wherever you listen. Reviews help us get to more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. And let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Calma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. We're supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society of Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.